Mimi Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I'm staying here. There's no water, no life, but I'm staying on the rubble of my home. I'm living over my home, and I will not leave my home, even if it's the last day of my life.
Displaced Palestinians are returning to their old homes to find nothing but ruins. We'll go to Gaza to speak to Save the Children, as Israel continues to severely limit aid trunks into the Gaza Strip. Then, as the U.S. government shutdown enters its 16th day, the Trump administration's giving a $20 billion bailout to Argentina's right-wing president, Javier Milei.
We're going to work very much with the president. We think he's going to win. He should win. And if he does win, we're going to be very helpful. And if he doesn't win, we're not going to waste our time, because you have somebody whose philosophy has no chance of making Argentina great again.
As the Supreme Court appears poised to further weaken the Voting Rights Act, we will talk to the ACLU and dozens of Pentagon reporters from almost every major network, including Fox, have turned in their press badges instead of agreeing to sweeping new restrictions on what they can report on. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli officials say they'll further delay the reopening of the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and the Gaza Strip as Israel continues to severely limit humanitarian aid to more than 2 million Palestinians still suffering from hunger and malnutrition, as well as severe shortages of medicine, clean water and other basic goods. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera reports Israeli fires killed at least 3 Palestinians so far today, despite the ceasefire deal that went into effect last week. Israeli officials have threatened to end the truce if Hamas doesn't return all the bodies of the dead Israeli hostages. On Wednesday, Hamas said it had turned over 2 more bodies, bringing the total number to 9, but said it would need specialized equipment to search through the rubble to find the bodies of 19 remaining captives, many believe killed by Israeli strikes. The Israeli military is not allowing in that specialized equipment. Meanwhile, thousands of Palestinians who were forced by Israel to flee their neighborhoods are returning to find their homes in rubble. This is displaced Gaza City resident Al-Abed Al-Fiumi.
There's no work, no food, no drinks, no housing, and now winter is coming. By God Almighty, I'm telling you, I swear we don't have blankets. I have nothing, nothing at all. I left and my house was destroyed, and I'm still in the same situation, and now we're suffering. Where are we supposed to live? Where are we supposed to go? What are we supposed to do? There are about 36 of us here, me, my grandchildren, my daughters-in-law, and my children, and we don't know where to go or where to turn.
The popular Palestinian leader Marwan Barghouti is suffering rib fractures after being beaten unconscious in an Israeli prison. The Palestinian prisoner's media office said Wednesday. His son, Ara Barghouti, said the assault took place as his father was being transferred between prisons in Israel. According to Ara Barghouti, the beating allegedly took place after far-right Israeli National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir visited Marwan Barghouti in prison in August and showed him a picture of an electric chair, telling him he deserved to be executed. Marwan Barghouti has been in prison for 20 years, serving 5 life sentences. Israel prevented his inclusion on the list of Palestinian prisoners to be freed as part of the ceasefire deal. In Spain, hundreds of thousands of workers and students walked out of schools and workplaces Wednesday in support of the Palestinian people, calling on the Spanish government to sever ties with Israel. Huge crowds marched in Barcelona, Valencia, Bilbao, Sevilla, and Madrid.
Mira, mi conciencia no me dejaría estar en casa.
My conscience wouldn't allow me to be home. It's taken so long. It's been 2 years for people to mobilize and say, stop the genocide. Spain should cut economic and diplomatic ties with the Israeli government. They speak nice words, but until we break ties, Israel will keep on doing whatever it wants.
The Swedish activist Greta Thunberg has provided details about the abuse she and other participants of the Global Samud flotilla suffered in Israeli detention after they were abducted on the high seas while attempting to bring food and medicine to Gaza. Thunberg describes a visit by Israel's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir to the Ketziot prison where the activists were being held. She says he shouted, you are terrorists, you want to kill Jewish babies, and those who shouted back were taken aside and beaten. Thunberg says she was repeatedly kicked by guards, forced to undress, and was held in an insect-infested cell where she was deprived of food and water. She says she was repeatedly called a whore in Swedish by the Israeli guards, who scrawled the word and other profane graffiti on her suitcase. Thunberg said, quote, if Israel, with the whole world watching, can treat a well-known white person with a Swedish passport this way, just imagine what they do to Palestinians behind closed doors, unquote. President Trump says he's authorized the CIA to conduct covert operations inside Venezuela. This comes as the U.S. says it destroyed 5 boats in the Caribbean Sea, allegedly carrying drugs, reportedly killing 27 people. 4 of those boats allegedly came from Venezuela. Speaking to reporters Wednesday, Trump said, quote, we are certainly looking at land now because we've got the sea very well under control, unquote. In response, the Venezuelan president, Nicolas Maduro, lashed out at the possibility of further U.S. intervention.
No al cambio de régimen.
No to regime change, which reminds us so much the endless failed wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and so on. No to CIA-orchestrated coup d'etats, which recall the 30,000 disappeared and the CIA-backed coups against Argentina, Pinochet's coup, and the 5,000 young people who were killed or disappeared.
Dozens of reporters handed in their access badges and walked out of the Pentagon Wednesday afternoon instead of agreeing to the Defense Department's new press policy. The policy states media outlets and reporters cannot obtain any information that the Pentagon does not explicitly authorize. About 40 to 50 journalists from major news outlets left together before the 4 p.m. deadline. Jack Keane, a retired U.S. Army general and analyst for Fox News, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's former employer said, quote, they want to spoon-feed information to the journalist, and that would be their story. That's not journalism, he said. Only the One America News Network agreed to sign on to the Pentagon's new press policy. The Supreme Court on Wednesday appeared ready to strike down a key provision of the Voting Rights Act. During oral arguments, justices expressed skepticism over whether Section 2 of the landmark 1965 law should be allowed to continue. Section 2 outlaws the creation of election districts that dilute minority groups' voting power. This comes as Republican state lawmakers in Texas, Missouri, and Utah are pushing ahead with mid-decade redistricting efforts in 2025, ahead of next year's midterm elections. Other redistricting battles are underway in California, North Carolina, and Ohio as Republicans seek to hold their House and Senate majorities. The federal government shutdown has entered its 16th day. On Wednesday, a federal judge temporarily halted the Trump administration from laying off 4,000 government workers across 8 agencies siding with unions. In her ruling, Judge Susan Ilston wrote that the White House Budget Office and Office of Personnel Management have, quote, taken advantage of the lapse in government spending and government functioning to assume that all bets are off, that the laws don't apply to them anymore, and they can impose the structures that they like, unquote. The ruling came as the Senate failed to pass a funding bill for the 9th time on Wednesday. In immigration news, the Trump administration is preparing to deport a man arrested by ICE on the same day he was freed from a Pennsylvania prison after serving 43 years behind bars for a crime he did not commit. On October 3rd, 64-year-old Subramaniam Vedam walked free from Huntington State Correctional Institution, where he'd been held for over four decades after his conviction for a 1982 murder was vacated. His freedom came 3 years after the Pennsylvania Innocence Project uncovered evidence prosecutors had buried an FBI report that would have exonerated him. He was immediately arrested by ICE agents acting on a decades-old deportation order. He's now being held at an ICE jail in central Pennsylvania and set to be deported to India. Vadim's niece told the Miami Herald, quote, "He left India when he was 9 months old. He hasn't been there for over 44 years, and the people he knew when he went as a child have passed away. His whole family, his sister, his nieces, his grandnieces, we're all U.S. citizens, and we all live here," she said. The Trump administration's considering a plan to radically curtail refugee admissions to the United States while giving preference to English speakers, white South Africans, and Europeans who oppose migration. That's according to documents obtained by The New York Times, which reports the proposals would transform a program aimed at helping the most vulnerable people in the world into one that gives preference to mostly white people who say they're being persecuted. Among the beneficiaries would be members of the Alternative for Germany Party, known as AFD, whose leaders have revived Nazi slogans, minimized the Holocaust, and promoted anti-immigrant hatred. Members of the Democratic Women's Caucus on Wednesday marched through the Capitol and to Speaker Mike Johnson's office with Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva demanding she be sworn in. Grijalva won a special election in Arizona more than 3 weeks ago. She would be the final vote on a discharge petition to release the Epstein files. On Tuesday, Grijalva reported she finally had access to her congressional office, but that the phone lines aren't working and there's no computers or internet in the office. Meanwhile, convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell, is reportedly receiving preferential treatment at a minimum security prison in Bryan, Texas. According to the Wall Street Journal, Maxwell met with several visitors in the federal prison camp's chapel back in August, while hundreds of prisoners were placed on lockdown and forced to stay in their dormitories. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Israel is threatening to relaunch its war on Gaza just days after the U.S. brokered ceasefire took effect. Israel has accused Hamas of violating the ceasefire deal after failing to turn over the remains of all 28 deceased hostages in 72 hours. Earlier today, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, quote, "The fight is not over yet." He said Israel is determined to secure all of the remaining bodies. Meanwhile, Defense Minister Israel Katz has reportedly instructed the Israeli military to develop new plans to defeat Hamas. On Wednesday, Hamas said it had turned over two more bodies, bringing the total number to nine, but said it would need specialized equipment to search through the rubble to find the bodies of the 19 remaining captives. Israel has not allowed the specialized equipment into Gaza. Speaking at the White House, President Trump acknowledged Hamas is facing a difficult task.
Please. Well, they're looking for them. Absolutely. They're looking. So we have the living hostages all back. They returned some more today. It's a gruesome process. I almost hate to talk about it. But they're digging. They're actually digging. There are areas where they're digging and they're finding a lot of bodies. Then they have to separate the bodies. You wouldn't believe this. And some of those bodies have been in there a long time. And some of them are under rubble. They have to remove rubble.
This all comes as Israel's military continues deadly attacks on Palestinians. Al Jazeera reports Israeli fire killed at least three Palestinians so far today. Meanwhile, aid groups say far more food and aid is desperately needed as Israel continues to severely limit the number of aid trucks into the besieged territory. We go now to Deir al-Balah in Gaza, where we're joined by Rachel Cummings, Save the Children International's humanitarian director and team lead in Gaza. Rachel, describe what's happening on the ground, even as the ceasefire has taken effect.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, in Gaza now, there is a sort of cautious optimism since Thursday when the ceasefire was announced. But of course, the needs of children and their families has not changed since that time. What we need is to be able to run our nutrition centres, our health clinics, provide the learning opportunities, the child protection services, and of course, life-saving interventions, including water. To allow us to do that, we need humanitarian supplies to enter into Gaza alongside commercial supplies with certainty and at scale.
And Rachel, if you could say, you know, hundreds of thousands of Gazans now are attempting to return to what was once their home. Is aid reaching them as they make this journey? And many of them, of course, finding that there's nothing left of their homes.
You know, the scale of the destruction and devastation across the whole of Gaza is extraordinary. Yesterday, I drove from Derobala through Khan Yunis, and every single building is damaged or destroyed, and people are living under the rubble. And of course, as you said, hundreds of thousands of people are in desperate need of shelter, of essential supplies. We're soon to be entering into winter. It's getting quite cold now in Gaza, and people have completely inadequate shelter to protect them from the elements. People need shelter, tents, they need blankets, we need all of these items, including basics like children's clothes, children's shoes, to protect people in this winter period. But no, we do not have enough supplies entering Gaza. And as I said, these need to come in at scale and consistently.
And if you could say, Rachel, you know, UNRWA, the UN agency for Palestinian refugees, has said they have a 3-month supply of food for everyone in Gaza. And they're just waiting, I'm just outside Gaza, and they're just waiting to get in. Do you know what the status is of UNRWA? I mean, are they still banned from working there? And when will these trucks get in?
UNRWA continue to provide services, health, essential services, health, education services in Gaza. Save the Children, along with many other humanitarian actors in Gaza, have supplies on the other side of Gaza and are trying to navigate the complexity of bringing these supplies in. We've been very fortunate with our partnerships with the United Nations, with UNICEF, with WHO, to allow us to continue providing the services in our health centres and our nutrition points by receiving supplies from them inside Gaza for the last, since March, actually. So what we need, again, is these humanitarian supplies, UNRWA supplies, other supplies to enter to Gaza. We have them outside. We know, as humanitarian agencies alongside the UN, how to do safe and dignified distributions. And this is what's needed now, again, at scale and consistently.
Can you talk about what has happened with the, to say the least, controversial, shadowy Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, where so many people, men, women and children who were seeking aid were killed on their way to getting food? Is it operating at all right now, the U.S.-backed Israeli group that was solely allowed to provide aid? And how is all the aid, how are the international groups resuming control of distributing food?
So my understanding of the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is it is no longer operating. We've heard reports that some of their sites have been dismantled and closed down, but I have no other information than what's publicly available. In terms of humanitarian organizations and the UN, of course, who are still able to bring in supplies, and we've seen this increase in the number of supplies that have been able to enter since the ceasefire was announced on Thursday. We have very strong relationships with communities. Save the Children's been working in Gaza since the 1950s. We know our communities and how to serve people in Gaza. And really, the critical element of that is the relationships that we have and the communication and the trust that we are holding with the communities. So if we're able to bring in our supplies, communicate with the communities that these are coming, the distribution is going to be safe. And therefore, what we need to ensure, of course, during distributions of any kind, is that the most vulnerable people, the child-headed households, the pregnant women, the elderly, the disabled, are prioritized, because we know through many, many experiences that these are the most vulnerable in these times.
And Rachel, finally, if you could just comment on a report, the Guardian reporting, saying that it's not enough to just count the number of trucks getting into Gaza, because not all the trucks are carrying aid that is helpful to people in Gaza. On Wednesday, the Guardian reported that commercial operators are sending convoys of trucks full of chocolate, fizzy drinks and snacks, which have, of course, very little nutritional value. Do you know anything about this? And also, who are these commercial operators?
Well, we see this in the markets in Gaza throughout this war, have responded whenever supplies, whether commercial or humanitarian, enter into Gaza. And now the markets are responding to that entry of supplies. And we see chocolate and cans of drinks in the market. But we also see nutritious food. We see rice, we see flour, we see fruit, and we see vegetables. But what we need, of course, in addition to the humanitarian and commercial supplies entering into Gaza, is services. And children need essential services, including the health centres, the nutrition centres, but also learning and child protection. You know, we're now at this cautious optimism where children are able to start building hope and hope for the future. The bombs have stopped dropping for the first time significantly in 2 years, and that allows us as an organisation like Save the Children to work with children to build hope for the future with the services that we're providing.
Rachel Cummings, we want to thank you for joining us. Save the Children International's humanitarian director and team lead in Gaza, Indira Balah. As we turn now to Khan Yunis, we're joined by Maureen Khaki, head of mission for GLIA International, a medical solidarity organization that sent doctors to Gaza. Maureen has been in Gaza since June of last year. She's recently been assisting international doctors with translation for Palestinian prisoners released from Israeli jails. This is one newly released Palestinian, Majid Abid, who was detained nearly 2 years ago.
The situation is extremely, extremely hard for young men. No food, no drink, no medical care. They face constant oppression, torment. I wish everyone would pay attention to their situation. May God protect everyone. Thank God. It's an indescribable feeling.
So, Maureen Khaki, if you can talk about the people you have translated for, what is very clear from the images we're seeing of Palestinians who have been released from Israeli prisons, what, some 1,700 apparently in Gaza, more released in the occupied West Bank, is how thin they are, almost skeletal, though they are all wearing those heavy gray sweatshirts. Describe the experiences that you have heard of these people.
Yeah, Amy, it was really, really tragic to listen to the things that they had to share. Some of it they didn't have to share. Some of it was visually represented on their bodies and the way you were describing. But three folks that we saw and talked to in particular had fresh gunshot wounds from as late as 3 weeks ago that were all in their leg, in their thigh. It was like the same place. They had, every single one that I spoke to had described the same experience of the fact that since the ceasefire was announced, they were only allowed toilet water to drink. They were not given any food. Some were beat by Israeli forces as early as 2 hours before their arrival into Gaza while they were waiting on the bus. Everybody described torture, both like brutal sort of beatings to different parts of their body, but also sort of quote-unquote soft forms of torture where they were forced to kneel or sit in an uncomfortable position for several hours at a time. It was really horrifying what they had to share.
And Maureen, if you could give us some details, who are the prisoners that you've been talking to? What kinds of facilities were they held in? And were most of them held under administrative detention? Had they been charged? Had there been a trial, or were they just awaiting trial?
Yeah, thank you for that question. So none of them had been charged. This was all actually, they were all being illegally detained, like under the practice that you named, Israel's administrative detention, which they all described the fact that they were not given any kind of lawyer. They weren't given any kind of communication to the outside world. And in fact, Israeli imprisoners were telling some folks that their whole family had been killed. And in some cases, that wasn't true. In some cases, they just didn't get any news at all. And they came back to learn about that their family had indeed been killed by Israel. And so these are people who, I mean, there was a range of folks. There were young men as young as 21 years old, I explicitly remember, and then elder men as old as mid to late 50s. And most of the people that I spoke to were just taken from their homes after their homes had been attacked by Israeli fire at some point, and then they were either injured or disoriented and taken from their homes or the places that they were when they were attacked. They're captives. They were taken hostage by the Israeli military.
So again, of these well over 1,000 men, close to 2,000, were not charged. The ones that were released in Gaza.
No, they were being illegally imprisoned as captives by the Israeli military and then the Israeli government.
And where were they held, Maureen?
There were different prisons that they were at in occupied Palestine and in Israel. The conditions under which they were held. So scabies was so rampant in imprisoned Palestinians that the Ministry of Health had actually prepared care packages that included scabies treatment for everyone because that's how much of a blanket problem it was. So they were held in confined, cramped spaces where other Palestinians, like you guys had mentioned before, from the West Bank are also held under administrative detention, including children.
One of the men that we just showed who was weeping on the ground on his knees had just learned that his wife and children had been killed in an Israeli airstrike. He was holding a little bracelet he had for, I believe, his 2-year-old. Had they had any information as they were being held about what was happening on the ground?
They were not. The gentleman you're talking about, actually, he was one of the first people to come through. I was in the room when he received the news. They were not. I asked them, actually, one of the things I was doing was offering my cell phone so they could call their families. And often, because there were so many people in the area and because Israel had ruined the infrastructure, it was hard to get cell reception. And so they told me, can I send a message? And if they call you back once I leave, can you just tell them that I'm physically okay and that I will find them? So there was no communication being allowed to happen at all in the entire time that they were held captive. Some of them were held captive for as little as 3 months, and some of them for several years.
Maureen Kaki, we just want to end by asking why you are there. You are head of mission for GLIA International. You've been in Gaza for well over a year. You actually come from Texas.
Yeah, I'm Palestinian American, and so this is a personal struggle for me in the sense of our people are one people, whether it's the West Bank where I'm from or in Gaza or in occupied Palestine. And so that it matters to me that I can serve my people in this way, even if it's as small as it is. But the other thing is that I am a taxpaying American citizen, and I feel absolutely disgusted by the fact that our country continues to use taxpayer dollars to fund Israel's occupation and violence against Palestinians. And so for me, it was an easy decision to try to do this kind of work to kind of not to offset the violence that I contributed to financially in the U.S., but to find some way that I could ease my own guilt in that sense. It's been the greatest honor of my life to be able to be here in Gaza and do the little that I can to help.
Maureen Kaki is head of mission for GLIA International. She is speaking to us from Gaza. Coming up, as the U.S. government shutdown enters its 16th day, the Trump administration's giving a $20 billion bailout to Argentina's right-wing president, Javier Milei. Stay with us.
صوتي ما عنده حدود.